Hi, thanks for the opportunity. My name's Dale Trott. I teach into occupational health and safety at CQ University Australia. So along that line, this is how my question will go to all the panellists, actually. How do we co-locate heavy industry and its workforce and do this in a sustainable way such that we limit the risk to the health of the population and the community in general?
Well, as you know, that's where zoning came in, because people said, let's put heavy industry, and that's what you're talking about, isn't it? Heavy industry away from residential development. I still think that some industry has to be the other side of a major road from residential development, if I can use that analogy. But, of course, as you would also know, heavy industry is not the predominant form of industry now. In planning jargon, we talk about employment, and the majority of employment is, in fact, industry that can be quite happily co-located in mixed-use centres with residential, with other activities. But it's very hard to take, I suppose, what one would say is polluting industry and not have regard to the occupational health and safety of neighbours as well as the workers. No, that doesn't answer your question, no.
Anyone else want to have a go at answering that difficult question? Yes, we've got a member of the audience.
My name's Owen Foll. I'm a furniture designer and maker, and I run a business where I salvage timber from mostly the inner suburbs of Brisbane, because they are constituted from the fabulous natural heritage of forests that formerly occupied southeast Queensland. And I reconstitute that material just outside the residential zone, in an industrial zone, and then I bring it back as highly finished furniture. And the pollution issues are always nagging at me. You know, I create dust, I create noxious vapours and so on, and so I'm always pushing to incorporate systems of eliminating that kind of pollution. And the technology is available, and technology improves all the time. You know, the glues and the lacquers actually get less noxious as time goes by, and people come up with really good solutions for that kind of thing.
Thanks. Thank you, Owen. Another question from the audience.
Good afternoon. Rob Haynes. The speakers this afternoon have raised a lot of interesting questions, but I'd just like to touch on possibly one or two points. Sue raised the point about the size of our homes, and I heard a very interesting comment the other day that we're physically getting bigger, so instead of having double beds, we all now have queen and king size beds, which means the rooms are bigger, which means makes the houses bigger. But the biggest challenge that we face is food production, and this is probably something that I'll address to Shane. The town planning that we have currently, and especially in Brisbane, doesn't set aside spaces for growing food. I can see all those little possums out there with their little jaws gnashing, saying, well, it'd be great if everybody starts growing veggies in their backyard. But we need to look at this, because over the years we've seen our food growing areas, and I'm talking about Richlands, Redland Bay, now covered in roads and concrete, which has downgraded the areas that we can grow healthy food in. Shane, are there moves afoot to change the planning so that we can get areas where we can grow healthy food at an economic price?
The short answer is I've got no idea. Sue is an urban planner and might, but something I can say to that is necessity is the mother of invention. Should we come to need to produce our food as Cuba did more locally, our cities are actually full of green spaces that could be potentially converted into food production areas. That's what happened in a place like Havana, that they used every available space as was necessary. As for whether there are planning changes afoot, Sue might address that one.
Thanks, Shane. Definitely food security as an issue is now on the agenda, as Shane has alerted us to. And when it comes to expanding our cities, and that's the issue you're alluding to, it comes back to relative value. And growing food has been seen traditionally for the last 50 years as not as important as building houses. Now, if we're going to change the way our cities grow in the future, then we can save that land for food growing, but it means staying within the boundaries of our cities and using the land within our cities in a more efficient way. And those are decisions. Shane challenged us all to make decisions with our fork. Those are decisions that we can all make about the future shape of our cities. We can continue to sprawl, but we will eat up. No, sorry, we won't eat up. We will consume more arable land where people grow food right on the periphery of all of our cities, Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane and many others. And I think it's a hugely important issue that, as a community, we need to be thinking about.
Can I just add in another point? It's Dan Hill from Arup here, about perhaps the other benefits of using that space for food as well, in that... It handles water incredibly well. It handles stormwater better than some of the more engineered solutions, in fact, because we've actually taken porous surfaces and green surfaces away and tarmacked them, as you said, and that's causing all kinds of problems now all over the world and creating flooding, essentially. So stormwater does not run naturally across those things, but the more that we introduce green spaces back into that, productive or not, then actually that handles water quite efficiently.
Great. Any more questions, comments, thoughts?
Hi, my name's Vanessa Rothwell and I'm an architect. Sue said that she thought people would start moving back to having smaller spaces, even though they might spread out to the bigger ones and come back then to smaller. I mean, a lot of what I especially studied at university talks about McMansions as a problem. And if you look in any of the weekend papers, you see masses of advertisements for houses that have the family room, the entertainment room, the dining room, the formal living room and the rumpus room, etc., etc. You think that this will change, but do you think maybe there's some education needed towards this? And I've often wondered how that education happens and whose responsibility it might be.
Well, I guess I have a great deal of confidence in the younger generation at the moment. And I'm not sure that they're the ones buying McMansions. I know in Sydney, most of the McMansions are bought as a second home from those who had a previous home, and they're, in a sense, buying up. And they perceive that buying a McMansion is what is good, even though they may not use all those rooms. As a start-out couple with one, maybe two kids. And that's why there are quite a few projects at the moment about deconstructing the McMansion. You know, if you've got a McMansion with four bedrooms upstairs and a rumpus room and kitchen and bathrooms, four bathrooms and all the rest of it, it's not such a difficult challenge as an architect for you to divide that into at least two houses, even in McMansion land. Is to say, look, you can. There are usually a lot of verges that could be transformed into gardens and herb gardens because they tend to have front yards in McMansion land. They could be transformed. Some of those houses could be broken down with council approval, and I think this is where we need people to be more flexible about how can we use spaces like that in a more efficient way. Maybe one of those McMansions in a community could be turned into a childcare centre and some community meeting rooms as a way of enabling people to be able to walk to those kind of places more easily than having to get into the car, because that's one of the other difficulties in that kind of suburban existence, is that you're very dependent on your car.